So we have arrived. It's the sermon, when I say the book of Daniel, that everybody's waiting for. Daniel chapter 6. If you go out on sermoncentral.com, there are so many Daniel chapter 6 sermons out there that as I just started reading through them, and yeah, I admit, I read other people's sermons. Sometimes it gets my creative juices flowing, and sometimes I find some things that I really like, and I borrow. It's not stealing, it's borrowing, okay? I intend to return it to them someday. But when I read all through this, it's quite intimidating to get to Daniel chapter 6 and write a sermon, because you are in sacred territory here. We love this story. Daniel chapter 6. Daniel in the lion's den. So let me help you out. I have a spoiler alert for you. Daniel still escapes unharmed, according to Daniel chapter 6, verses 21 through 22. And well, according to verse 23, the lions don't even get a nibble. They don't even get a lick. All right, what a terrible moment that must have been for the lions. And well, just so you know, it still happens the same way. Verse 24 says that the bad guys, well, they still get thrown to the lions in the end, and Daniel goes free. Welcome to the lion's den. Because I'm done with the lion's den. Everybody asked me, so are you going to do sound effects? How are you going to do this? Are you going to decorate? No, because I have zero intention of going to the lion's den today. Because I'm not interested in the lion's den. I'm not interested in Daniel's great escape. I am interested in Daniel's awesome stand. Daniel and his friends have been taking stands all throughout the book of Daniel. At the table, they stood out. They stood out before the king when they humbled themselves. His companions stood firm as they faced the adversity of fire. And well, after that story, when it just kind of became Daniel by himself, he stood truthful when faced with delivering a difficult message. And last week, we watched him stand controlled when he was put into an emotional situation. Today, we will watch Daniel stand up for his relationship with God. And we're going to discover something that, in the back of my mind, I already knew, but in the front of my mind, we often forget. Daniel is a prayer guy. I already told you earlier, this was the secret sauce to how he managed to live in the world and not of the world. Today, we're going to look at the importance of a praying life. I want you to notice I've changed your term on you. I am not talking about a prayer life. I am interested in talking about a praying life. See, this is not the sermon on prayer. That happens next week. You know what the title of next week's sermon is? Stand Prayerful. So we'll talk more about what it means to actually pray next week. But before we can start talking about prayer, we have to come to the understanding that before we can have a dynamic prayer life, you have to decide how important is a praying lifestyle. Now, I do understand all people that come to church, if I sit down and talk to you, you think prayer is important. I am willing to bet that sometime during your day that you pray. Maybe you're one of these crazy people that gets up at 5 o'clock in the morning and prays. I'm not with you, okay? But if that's your time, that's fine. Maybe your prayer life is centered around breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you know, praying for your meals. Maybe your prayer life is before you go to bed. But everybody that I have ever talked to that goes to church says prayers. But you know, saying prayers is much different than living a praying lifestyle. So this morning, we are going to stand with Daniel, and we're going to watch Daniel as he stands up. I'm in Daniel chapter 6, verses 1 through, that should be verse 1 through 4. And it says, it pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule throughout the kingdom, with three administrators over them, one whom was Daniel. The satraps were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. Now, Daniel so distinguished himself amongst the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities, the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. At this, the administrators and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. What a testimony. These first four verses, well, they lay the groundwork, and surprise, surprise, Daniel got a promotion. He's really good at this. Have you ever noticed this? Daniel is constantly getting promotions. And this is kind of one of those things that maybe you can take it out of the story, and this is a side note. Again, buy one, get one free. Now, this is a side note for you. If you're trying to figure out how to get a promotion in your job, just take a look at what Daniel did. Daniel got the job not because he was a Jew. He got the job because he distinguished himself amongst the other administrators. So now we're back to he stood out. They looked at him and said, wow, look at Daniel. But what made him a really good administrator? There was no corruption in him. He was honest. Man, wouldn't you like to have a few of those in our government? Some honest people that just said things honestly, told you what they were up to, and that's what they were going to do. They said what they were going to do, and they did what they said they were going to do. It just kind of goes that way. Daniel had no corruption in him. It says he was trustworthy. He was dependable. You could count on Daniel. If he said he's going to be there, he shall be there, probably a little bit early, maybe a little bit late. You can count on Daniel. And, well, he wasn't negligent. So not only was he there, not only was he there with no corruption, was he honest, you know what, he wasn't negligent. He looked across everything, he said, I'm going to do what I'm going to do, and you know what, I said I'm going to do it, so you can just count on Daniel. And all of this is important, because a lot of times when we tell the story of Daniel and the lion's den, we tell it wrong. We think that they had something against Daniel's God, and the reason Daniel was thrown to the lion's den was because he was Jewish. That was not the reason. You know why he was thrown to the lion's den? It's a greed thing. So the other guys were looking around, and Daniel got the promotion. They're like, wait a minute, I wanted that promotion. I wanted that job, and I'm not going to answer to this guy. So they decided, you know, we have a solution to our problem. We'll just get Daniel in trouble with the government. And once we get Daniel in trouble with the government, well, then, you know what? That'll end this. And so when we began to look at how they were going to talk about Daniel, here's the summary of how they decided to approach Daniel. Daniel chapter 6, verse 5. We will never find any basis for charges against this man, Daniel, unless it's something to do with the law of his God. What a testimony Daniel has. If we're going to find some way to trick Daniel, some way to trap Daniel, we know there is nothing that we can use out there unless, what if we take his faith and we make it work against him and we go something against his God, because we know that is territory that Daniel isn't going to surrender. And you know what? I think this is what Peter meant when he wrote in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 12, live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. So here we go. They've got to come up with a way to defeat Daniel. So how do you attack the man that just seems to be a pillar? Oh, they found a way. Verses 6 through 9. So these administrators and satraps went as a group, and that's the first thing you need to see. They had to have a group. Okay? They weren't willing to go on their own. They've already seen people try to go one-on-one against Daniel, and you don't win those battles, right? So, got a solution. Let's just all get together as a group. Went as a group to the king and said, may King Darius live forever. Then the royal administrators, prefects, satraps, advisors, and governors have all agreed that the king should issue an edict and enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god or human being during the next 30 days except you, your majesty, shall be thrown into the lion's den. Now your majesty, issue the decree and put it in writing so that it cannot be altered. in accordance with the law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed. So King Darius put the decree in writing. How they chose to attack Daniel was almost impressive as their statement. See, when you decided to attack Daniel, they did not go after his worship. They did not look at Daniel and say, you can't sing songs about God anymore. They did not look at Daniel and say, you know what, you can't do worship the way that you're used to doing it anymore. They didn't attack his philosophy. They didn't go after Daniel and say, you know all that scripture reading you do and all those scrolls that you look at? Well, we're going to outlaw reading those scrolls. Because if we take away that, then, yeah, that'll make you fall. No. These guys went right after Daniel's core. They chose the one piece of Daniel's relationship they knew he would never surrender. What did they choose? Well, they choose what they knew. They knew just how important Daniel's praying lifestyle was to him. And now that leads me to ask a very convicting question. Is a praying lifestyle that important to me? The U.S. Supreme Court first ruled against school-sponsored prayer in 1962 in Engle versus Vattel. Since then, the justices have consistently ruled against school-sponsored worship while permitting voluntary, student-initiated religious activities. Over the years, the ruling has been challenged in court. And well, there's been some negative and positive influence on this particular ruling. However, I need you to know something, because I've heard it come out of everybody's mouth, and it's just not true. They did not ban prayer. They did take away the required prayer in a public setting, and I will be honest, and I might make some people go, I'm not necessarily sure that's a bad thing. Because if I have to require you to pray, are you really praying? If your heart's not into it, what's the point? You see, they didn't take it away. They did not require a forced prayer, but make no mistake about it, prayer has become silent. But not because of the law passed, but because of an attitude taken. Huh? What? Well, think about it. The law comes nowhere close to the church's ability to gather and pray. But we struggle with this notion. Gather and just pray. The law says nothing about training and demonstrating to our kids the importance of prayer so that they will someday feel comfortable in praying in front of their friends. The law has no limiting effect on how often we can gather and pray, nor what we pray for. Seems that law they passed, they probably should have taken a lesson from King Darius. Because when we come to Daniel chapter 6, we get to see what a real ban looks like when it comes to prayer. You know what Daniel's prayer life was challenged with? His law? Pray and die. If you get on your knees before God, make no mistake about it, Daniel, we are going to have you executed. The most gruesome way that we can think of. And I guess Daniel got a decision to make. And as we look to verses 10 through 11, it didn't take him very long to make it. Now, when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened toward Jerusalem. Three times a day, he got down on his knees and prayed. Daniel, are you crazy? Well, maybe, because it says, giving thanks to his God just as he had done before. Then these men went as a group and found Daniel praying and asking God for help. So upon hearing the news that it is now illegal to pray, what does Daniel decide he needs to go do? I better go pray about this law. Wow. That's a praying lifestyle, folks. I mean, he didn't have a demonstration. He didn't go up and down the streets and rally people together and say, we need to do something about this law. There was no slogan. There was no bumper sticker. There was no bulletin board. There was no call to arms because they have taken away our prayer. There was no petition. And remember, petitions were legal. Isn't that how this whole thing started? The other dudes got together and they got a group together and they all signed their name on the petition. They took it to the king. So Daniel had some legal recourse that he could do here, but he didn't need a petition. He didn't need a protest. He didn't have to make a picket sign. He didn't have to go and march on the steps of the Medo-Persian Empire to tell them what pagan people they were. He didn't even get to vote. He didn't get to the point where he got to say, you know what, let's just get rid of that king. Let's get one that works for us, that makes the laws in my favor. How did Daniel see his solution to the prayer laws? Well, it was no discussion. He didn't even go find Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and have a conversation with them. Just prayer. I love what Daniel's saying here. You absolutely, positively can have my prayer life. But you're going to have to claw it out of my cold, dead hands. Because I will not stop. Now, we often forget at this point Daniel has significant political power. And, well, he could have chosen to use it to have the law change. Now, I know what you're about to say. The Bible said that it couldn't be changed. Well, You have to remember that Medo-Persian law, under that Medo-Persian law, the law could not be repealed to remove a conviction under that law. So before Daniel went home and prayed, if he had just went to the king, they could have come up with a legal strategy to take care of this, because we're going to look at Daniel 28 and 29. They do find one way around it. So he could have come up and said, you know what? I'll just go to the king. Well, he went to the king, just not that king. And you know, in verses 25 through 28, again, they figure out how to take care of the law so that it removes the prayer ban. But Daniel didn't need that. Now, not only did Daniel have the political view, we also seem to forget that he had a personal relationship with King Darius. Verse 14 tells us, when the king heard this, he was greatly distressed. He was determined to rescue Daniel and made every effort until sundown to save him. So after they had caught Daniel in prayer and they had convicted him under the law, well, you know what? Now the king is like, I got to find a way to... And it says the king is losing sleep over this. In verse 18, it says, and the king returned to his palace and spent the night without eating food, without eating and without any entertainment being brought to him. And he couldn't sleep. So before Daniel went home and got on his knees before God, he could have went to the king and said, King, do you realize what you've done? Let's see if we can concoct a legal strategy to undo their legal strategy so that we can then have a law passed to protect our prayer life. Daniel didn't need that, right? Now, there's a good question here. Was Daniel showboating? I mean, let's be honest. Daniel, if you're going to pray and there's a law up there like that, pray with the window closed, right? You don't have to have that window open. You don't have to make such a spectacle. You should have kept your prayer life kind of close to you. We should have kept it in our prayer closet or our prayer room and not out there. And then everything would have been okay. And then you would have been not thrown to the lion's den. But we forget something. Daniel was Jewish, and that meant that before captivity, they gathered at the temple to pray, because that's where God resided. And under Jewish law, it said, if you could not gather at the temple when it was time for prayer, then you were to establish a clear line of sight and face toward the temple. That was the law at that point if you were Jewish. So you get what Daniel was doing here, right? Daniel was basically saying, I refuse to let anything get between me and my praying lifestyle. Not the curtain, not the time of day, not the law, nothing. And if that is what it, if that means I'm going to get convicted against man's law, I choose God's law over man's law any day of the week. Therefore, the curtain is open. Because folks, we love this phrase, right? Dare to be a Daniel. If you're daring to be a Daniel, it's not of surviving the lion's den. It is about developing a praying lifestyle. That's a little hard, isn't it? I always thought I was pretty good at this prayer thing until I look at the way Daniel's doing it. He cares not what the consequences of praying is because prayer is the number one priority in his life. Of course, we're not surprised. We know how this story works. He gets caught, and now the law is still in effect. So now there is no repeal of the law because somebody's now convicted under the law. So until his punishment is carried out, they can't do anything about the law. It is what it is. The king realizes it's all out of his hands. And well, he gives the order to have Daniel thrown to the lions. And you know what? We get one of the most eerie pictures that I've ever thought about. Verse 18. A stone was brought in place over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the rings of the nobles so that Daniel's situation might not be changed. Funny, those stones over caves don't seem to work as well as they used to, do they? Because the same thing is what they did to Jesus when they placed him in the tomb. They rolled a stone over that, and they sealed that one with the government signature, and they said, Jesus is done. And when that stone rolled over, you could probably see that all the men that had gotten together with that law, they were probably high-fiving each other and giving each other a thumbs up because you know what? They thought their Daniel problem was done. He's a dead man, right? They're lions. You know what lions are good at, right? They eat a lot. And they kind of left these guys hungry. So that means when they put somebody in there, it's kind of like, cool, food, finally. You didn't survive the lion's den for long, let alone overnight. Early the next morning, at the first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den. Wow, okay. When he came near to the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice, Daniel? Servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue you from the lions? What I couldn't do, Daniel, what about your God? You took a stand for him. Could he do it? And through the stone rolled over the mouth came a voice. May the king live forever. I got a feeling that probably had a double-edged mean to it. King Darius, I mean you no harm by what I did, but my God is king, and he's going to live forever. How impressive is that? And it wasn't because God did work a miracle, but the miracle began on your knees, not in the lion's den. If they had thrown most of us in the lion's den, we'd be done for. Because our relationship with God isn't where we stand up for them. Most of us never make it to the lion's den. The law gets passed. And well, we don't want to be persecuted by the law. No, we're not going to pray anymore. We're going to scale back on prayer. But because of his stand, I need you to see what Daniel actually accomplished. Then King Darius wrote to all the nations and peoples of every language in all the earth, May you prosper greatly. I issue a decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel. For he is the living God. He endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues, he saves, he performs signs and wonders in the heavens and the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions. So Daniel prospered during the reign of King Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. Isn't that amazing? He wasn't even concerned about the law, but Daniel got the law changed. And now he's got the best preacher in the world, the king, because everybody's got to listen to him. And what does he start off with? For this is the living God. He changed King Darius, because now the king is looking and saying, he is a living God. Rich talked about the idea that Jesus is a living word. He endures forever. He's a circle. He has no beginning. He has no end. He is a God eternal. And his kingdom? Yeah, I know what you think. King Nebuchadnezzar went in there and he leveled Jerusalem and he burned that temple. And we've been holding these people in captivity like for all these years. But this God, his kingdom, you can't destroy it. You can burn all the temples you want. You can do whatever you like, but you can't destroy this God because his dominion will never end because he closed the mouths of these lions. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in heaven and earth. And King Darius got all of this from Daniel's standing up, not against the law. That is not what Daniel stood up for. He wasn't standing up for the rights of Jewish people to pray. That's not what Daniel stood up for. He stood up for his ability to stand before God in a praying lifestyle and say, this is my core, and you can't have it, even if it cost me my life. Of course, did it cost Daniel his life? No, because Darius learned a hard lesson. What are we at now? 6-0? They keep a trying, and Daniel keeps a standing because he rescued Daniel from the power of the lions, the most powerful creature they could think of, the most vicious creature they could think of, and they had nothing for Daniel. Daniel patted them on the head and say, thanks for the night's stay, guys. Good night's sleep for me. Y'all take it easy. They're about to send you some food really quick, and that food you can eat. I have to ask you something. Is this the place we take our stand? We stand on a lot of things. Oh my gosh. We stand on church buildings, and we stand on this word and that word and this doctrine and that doctrine or this song and that song. We take a lot of stands in our Christian life. Is this the place that we want to take our stand? I hope so, because I have a surprise for you guys. We've been talking about 2024 a little bit and what's going to happen with the kids' ministry. Well, I got another surprise change we are about to make in 2024. Starting in January, the second Sundays, every second Sunday, is going to be prayer worship Sunday. So you realize what this means, right? We're going to trim a song or two from the deck. Somewhere between now and the first of the year, I got to figure out how to preach a 20-minute sermon so that I can scale a little time off of that. Because we're going to spend time taking the stand with Daniel. And we're going to stand up by getting on our knees. Now, we're not going to force anybody to pray. We're going to find some different ways to do this. But we are going to become a praying church if it kills us. We're going to do everything we possibly can to give you the opportunity to pray. Not going to force anybody to pray out loud. It can just be a time of silence if that's what you need. And the only way that we could think that we could do this is if we did the right thing, and that is we brought prayer where it belongs, into the middle of our worship service. So now you have a chance to make your plans. You can either arrange not to be here every second Sunday, or you can make your plans to be here every second Sunday, because this is going to be the most important service. And I'm going to tell you, we're not sure how it's going to all look at this point, and it'll look different from month to month. This is a learning experiment that we're putting in place that we have no idea how it's going to turn out. But I know how it turned out for Daniel. He took a stand on his praying lifestyle, and he changed the world. And isn't that what we're after, folks? To make disciples of all nations.